As we watch wildfires rage across southern Europe, it's a powerful indicator of the threat to life caused by climate change. On this episode of the Health Innovation Podcast, we hear about the mission to reduce carbon emissions and aim for a net zero NHS. I'm Caroline Kenyon, and my guests are three leaders calling on everyone to join them to help tackle this health emergency and save the planet. Hello and welcome to the Health Innovation Podcast. We're talking online today, but we can see each other on Teams, and it's really nice to see you all. First, we're going to do some introductions. If you can start by telling me who you are and your role and what that means, a brief overview of what you're doing to support the ambition of achieving a net zero NHS. Natalia, would you like to start?
Thank you very much, Caroline. My name is Natalia Kurek, and I'm one of the deputy directors at the Greener NHS programme at NHS England. I oversee the kind of the clinical side of the portfolio, so really understanding how we work with our clinical workforce as well as our wider workforce, but also how we look at how we deliver care in a more sustainable way. And part of that encompasses research and innovation, which I think is mainly why I'm here today. So thank you.
Thank you. Dominique?
Hello, everyone. Thanks for listening. I'm Dominique Allwood. I'm Chief Medical Officer at UCL Partners, and I've got a background in public health. UCL Partners is one of 15 organisations that focus on health innovation across the NHS and beyond, and we cover a population across North Central, North East London and out into Essex of about 5 million people, trying to get more research and innovation into the NHS to tackle some of the biggest challenges. And we partner with a number of hospital provider organisations and integrated care boards and systems, as well as universities in our partnership. I also lead our climate collaborative, and I think that's why I'm here today, and I'm looking forward to telling you a bit more about that a bit later on.
Yes, indeed. Thanks, Dominique. And Pete?
Hi, Pete Waddingham. I'm the net zero lead for the Academic Health Science Network. So I support the 15 HSNs up and down the country, including UCL Partners that Dominique's just mentioned. I support and work with the Greener NHS team, so Natalia and some of the ICSs across the country. And I also work and look for and identify innovation that can have a net zero benefit. So they're kind of the three areas that I help get involved in.
That's fantastic. Thank you all so much. Natalia, as your Deputy Director of Greener NHS, you're perhaps the best person to ask to set the scene for us. Can you describe the scale of the challenge that's facing the health of the population through climate change?
Thanks, Caroline. Yes, of course. So I really just want to start by saying that we know that the climate change is a health emergency. And if we really want to deliver high quality care for all, as we talk about when we talk about what the NHS's overall ambition is, we really need to tackle climate change at the source. And we really need to start tackling climate change at the source today, tomorrow and every single day. And we know if we look at kind of global evidence, global statistics, that more than 13 million deaths around the world each year are due to avoidable environmental causes. And the WHO has demonstrated that 99% of people breathe unhealthy air resulting from the burning of fossil fuels. And that's a really startling percentage, I think. We also have seen in evidence that's come out from the Chief Medical Officer's annual report back in 2022 that there are significant health threats posed by air pollution in the UK alone. We know that heart disease, stroke, lung disease, cancer, all of those are affected by air pollution. And we've seen, 26,000 to 38,000 excess deaths a year in this country associated with bad air quality. And we know really sadly that it disproportionately affects the poorest and the most vulnerable communities. So that's really, the scale of the challenge is huge, but there's also a huge opportunity that comes with it. We know the health sector is if it was a country, it would be the fifth largest emitter of carbon emissions worldwide. And in the UK alone, the NHS is responsible for 4.6% of emissions. So whilst we are part of the problem, we are also really part of the solution. And I think that's what we're really here to talk about today.
So much to talk about. And of course, we're talking at a time when wildfires are raging across Europe and other parts of the world, aren't we? It has never been more obvious what the climate change is, how it's affecting our planet. Dominique, as the medical director at UCL Partners, you're well aware of all the pressures on health services. So how do we get NHS organisations to pay attention to the need to become greener when they're grappling with so many other big challenges?
Yeah, it's a great question, Caroline. You've probably had a number of podcasts where they're focused on topics that the NHS needs to focus on and be aware of. And so there's lots of competing priorities for clinicians on the front line, for organisational leaders. They include things like patient flow challenges, financial challenges, a multitude of things. And so in some ways, climate could be seen as the thing that, oh, that's something over there we need to focus on tomorrow, or that's something that's in a kind of too difficult box. But as Natalia has rightly mentioned, this is absolutely urgent and important for a number of reasons. And one of those is that the amount of demand coming through those doors of all those institutions is contributed to by some of the issues around climate change. And so if we really do want to make our NHS more sustainable, we do need to think about that demand. And because we contribute to it as big organisations, as large polluters, we have a real opportunity to make a difference. And when you survey staff and indeed patients, many of them think that this is a really important thing to do. And so how we harness that interest and passion of people actually through the way in which we deliver and receive healthcare is really important. There's no point at home in recycling all your paper and your cardboard and then coming to work and chucking all of that into a general refuse bin. So how do we make people think that that's their problem today? And we don't just need individual actions, we need organisations to be really focused on that. So all of the organisations within the NHS need to have sustainable management plans around what they're doing to tackle the challenges of net zero. But I guess for many of them, they often need a bit of that extra impetus. And that's where organisations like the AHSNs can come in. It's about doing things differently. It's about collaborating across different sectors. And it's also about helping to accelerate progress using innovation. And so I guess the thing to think about is, though, that this shouldn't just be the nice to have and not part of the day job. For many organisations looking at how they're transforming care at the moment, the opportunity to both tackle carbon and create better care at lower cost is really real and evident. And there are so many great examples, including things like digital transformation around outpatients, etc. Natalia also mentioned inequalities. We need to recognise that those things don't exacerbate inequalities. But really, we can be tackling those three C's of better care, lower cost and carbon all in one go. And that's the best way to think about how we make healthcare more sustainable in so many different ways.
Thanks. And we'll be hearing some examples from you in a few minutes as to how you're doing that at UCL Partners. Pete, Dominique mentioned working with other partners, working beyond the NHS to make this happen. And you bring in businesses to work with the health service to get innovations into the hands of patients and clinicians. But that work that you do, you are working in some instances against traditional resistance to involving the private sector in our beloved NHS. How do you go about overcoming that in the work you're doing?
Yeah, there's probably a few ways. I think, one of the key things that the HSN does is try to be that intermediary, to screen things almost, to work with industry first before we've even put it under the nose of the NHS, just to make sure that it is definitely meeting a challenge that they're looking for, that the business case is in order, that their value proposition is right. Sometimes we do get a lot of innovators coming to us with, I've got the silver bullet answer, but actually it's just not worked up fully enough. It's maybe not as comprehensive as they feel it is. Some of the number crunching hasn't been done just to articulate that business case. It's absolutely essential still that we can show that there is a financial benefit to doing some of the things that we're suggesting to be done around net zero, because we know that there are, as well as demand pressures, there are obviously still financial pressures on the NHS. So I think really there's a few ways. Yeah, we work with industry, we just kind of take some time with them, we work through some of those steps. Then when we're fairly confident that they might have something to offer, and that doesn't always mean that we've gone through a really sort of vigorous process, but then we'll start showcasing some of this innovation to the NHS. We've got lots of examples where we do that. Sometimes our innovators just want to get a bit of a foot in the door to get that feedback. So it doesn't need to be a polished offer. Actually, what those innovators might just be looking for is some honest feedback about, is this going to work well in the NHS? So as much as it's about finding those great innovations, those really kind of impactful ones, some of the early stage innovation that we still need to help with. So I think, you know, we try and just be that honest broker between the NHS and industry. We try and build relationships with the NHS so they trust us with our judgment, you know, the things that we're going to show that they add value. And hopefully we've got lots of examples where we can talk about not just about net zero, but where we've introduced innovation into the NHS, and then becoming that trusted source hopefully really helps.
Natalia, the Green NHS campaign has got two very big ambitions, hasn't it? Do you want to tell us what they are and how you're going to get there?
Yes, of course. So back in October 2020, we set two net zero targets, and being the first healthcare system globally to do that. So our two commitments are to get to net zero by 2040 for the emissions that we control directly, and 2045 for the emissions that we influence. So that includes our wider supply chain. And that's the one that's really challenging. I think it's not the 2040, it's the 2045 target. And those two kind of targets might seem quite far away. So we've also set ambitious kind of 80% reduction targets as well. And those are just around the corner. Those are, you know, 2028 for the emissions that we control directly, and 2036 for the ones that we influence. So again, you know, it's not waiting 10, you know, 15, 20 years to get to where we need to be. It's really taking action again today, tomorrow, kind of, and every day. In terms of how we're going to get there, that's a huge question. I could bore you and speak to you all day about how we're trying to do that. But there are some really big actions that are going on within the organisation, specifically focused around estates and facilities. Lots of work that needs to be done there. A huge amount that needs to be done around our supply chain. So how we procure from suppliers, but also how we actually kind of minimise the kind of the single use products that we're using, how we kind of better recycle, reuse products. And really trying to reduce the use of some of those really high carbon emitting medicines, things like desflurane, things like nitrous oxide, and things like metered-dose inhalers. And there's fantastic action that's going on across all of those. You know, desflurane, for example, first medicine ever to be decommissioned by the NHS because of environmental reasons. I mean, that is a huge momentous thing that's happened this year. And that's been with help from partners, external partners, from clinical colleagues. We can't do it alone. It's a job for everyone.
It is partnership working, isn't it, as both Pete and Dominique have said. Those are really ambitious targets, and you are three very positive leaders who are taking people with you. You are championing this fantastic cause. But can I ask you how optimistic you are that you will actually achieve those targets? Natalia, what about you?
You know what? I'm optimistic. I think you can only be optimistic in this scenario. I think so far since we've started, we've been on our trajectory. So we're meeting our expectations as the organisation in terms of annual carbon reductions. But I'm also optimistic because when you speak to people, when you speak to the workforce, our colleagues want to take action on this. As Dom said, you know, 9 out of 10 of the NHS workforce, they care about this. They want us to take more action, not less action. And I think we're only seeing more and more inspiring stories, more and more inspiring examples across the system of the fantastic work that's going on. So I think you can only be optimistic about this.
Dominique?
Yeah, I'd agree. And I'm usually a bit of a black cat, you know, glass half empty rather than glass half full. But the things that have been encouraging to me are things that Natalia mentioned, but also this real spirit of collaboration. So the NHS has come through a long period of having quite a lot of competition and still does in the way it benchmarks performance of organisations against each other, which is important and helps to drive quality. But actually these problems of tackling net zero are so big that you can't do them as individual organisations on your own. And so seeing how particularly even within the NHS, people are sharing and learning. It doesn't serve anyone well to be competitive in this space. And so that's been really heartening. And also the diversity of the types of people getting involved. So, for example, within a trust, the fact that, you know, a facilities and estates person is working with a clinical lead in a particular area that I haven't seen in my career in the NHS very much. And that's happening all over the place now. And then the stuff that Pete's been talking about, how do we collaborate across the commercial industry, across research, which we'll probably touch on, across the NHS, to all come together to tackle these problems. And we've seen so many more examples than I think we have in a sort of a long time that I remember in my career. So I am optimistic, and I think this collaboration and leadership that we're seeing from people has been really helpful. I guess the other thing is what makes change happen, and there's a multitude of things. That's policy, so the Green Team have been really instrumental in that. That's aligning incentives around what we do, for how we make these changes happen, financial and non-financial, around building skills and capability, around regulation, all of those things that you need in place to help make change happen. And then, of course, the engagement of people. That all seems to be never more present than it has been right now. So I think we've got a huge opportunity to galvanise on that in the next few years. But as Natalia says, we need to be really taking action fast.
Pete, what are the things that make you optimistic? And if you like, what are the things that give you cause for worry?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I'll be honest, to give a slightly different answer, I ebb and flow between optimism and anxiety. I do think I probably suffer from climate anxiety. I do sometimes sit and ponder and look at the state of the planet, and I often get quite disheartened when I'm maybe at home in my personal capacity, like, you know, ripping off a little bit of packaging so that it can be separated into its constituent parts. And then I'm doing that, but then I look around at the big global world about consumption and still burning of fossil fuels. And I think what am I actually achieving here? Because I'm not achieving anything really by doing that. I might make myself feel a little bit better, but I don't want to be here to make myself feel better. I want to kind of have an absolute positive impact. So I ebb and flow between optimism and as I say, climate anxiety. The thing that makes me optimistic, though, is innovation and creative thinking. And I often try and say things now that are gut feel, that go against maybe what traditional sustainability people often talk about. I think it's not just about let's reduce less and let's use less. It's about let's apply innovation, because we live in a world of consumption. We live in a world of economic growth that is happening all the time. So how can we apply innovation to allow people to do those things that they're probably still going to want to do, but it doesn't have a detrimental impact on the planet? And I often use the example of things like AI and robotics. That's got the potential, in my opinion, to absolutely change the waste processing landscape. You know, it shouldn't really be for humans to start having to sort of separate products. And actually, if we think about our home life, some of it just still ends up in our landfill, doesn't it? There's nothing we can do about it. You know, we can't as humans do that, but technology can do that and innovation can do that. Same with AI. I mean, data is absolutely fundamental. If we don't measure what we're doing, we're never going to know if we're making an achievement. And unfortunately, the scale is so complex that I think we need enabling technologies like AI to help us. So that's where I get optimistic, when I see these new innovative ways. So, yeah, I ebb and flow. I think it's serious. I don't think people have fully realised how soon the target years are going to be upon us. I just don't think the penny has fully dropped in people's personal circumstances and in you know, big institutions and organisations. So, today I'm probably optimistic because I'm talking to all of you, and it's great to be around like-minded people and positive people.
The wildfires that we're seeing, how are they impacting on people's optimism, if you like? Do they make them feel it's more urgent and they're more motivated to do something? Or do they think it's such a huge problem, like you just said, Pete, with your packaging dilemmas that you're sorting out very nicely? They're so far removed for it, it's pointless doing anything.
Let me just have a quick go answering that. Obviously you see it on the news. What I also see, though, is some scepticism about what's caused it, what people's beliefs are around it, whether it was naturally occurring. I'm a flood warden for the area that I live in. I'm looking out onto the flood bank that protects my home from flooding. You know, for me, climate change is real and has affected me and the property that I live in. So I'm a bit closer to it. So that's why it saddens me when people think it could potentially be a hoax and that the planet is changing anyway. I still see that as an example. I also think because it's something so complex like the climate, it's very difficult for people to... Well, it's easier to push it down the road and think, well, it's not raining today, my house isn't flooding today, so why should I worry? So I think, you know, from my perspective, it's useful to see these things on the news, but I think it's only when it directly impacts you do you become more emotionally attached.
Yeah, I can jump in there and say that I completely agree with Pete. I think the sadness of it is until, you know, you've lived through that experience, I think that people do feel relatively far removed from it. You know, I think we experienced that with, you know, NHS hospitals, for example. You know, unless you've worked in a hospital that's overheated or a hospital that has potentially been, you know, succumbed to some flooding, it doesn't feel real. It doesn't feel like the delivery of services are affected by climate change. And so I think the wildfires are hopefully creating more of a dialogue about this at the moment in terms of making people more aware. But I still think it's translating that to the reality into day-to-day practice, I think, is still a little bit far removed.
I guess, Caroline, Natalia also mentioned air pollution a bit earlier. And if you think closer to home in some of our big cities, that is an absolutely huge problem and often a big priority outside of the healthcare institutions. And many people will remember the very sad story of Ella, the 9-year-old who died of severe asthma, and her mother campaigned for a long time to have it acknowledged that air pollution was a contributing factor to that. And if you look around, many of the schools in which our children go to school are sitting in poor air quality zones. So I guess there's something about, oh, well, the fires are somewhere else in Europe on holiday, the heat waves are happening far away from us, but in our towns and cities, lots of things are impacting on our health that relate to our climate. And so I guess people being aware of those things and trying to think, well, this is actually every day that these things affect me and that I can have an impact through the work in which I go to in my organisation, through the NHS and indeed my personal life. As Pete says, small little acts on their own are not going to change things, but I think people do need to feel that they can do something. And in many organisations, there are climate champions, climate networks, loads of projects and programmes to be getting involved in, reaching out to local academic health science networks to get involved in some of the more innovative side of things. So I think people both need to feel it's real, but also feel that they can try and do something about it. And that's our key challenge.
Could I just get your opinion on something, Dom? Where do you stand on sort of raising the alarm and being alarmist? So, for example, we know that Newcastle were the first trust to declare a climate emergency. I think those words seem quite strong, like, and certainly the word emergency seems quite strong, but I also feel there's a bit of apathy with it. And I try and do it in the language that I use, and I sometimes feel a little bit nervous about it by being too alarmist. But the reality is that people are dying as of today because of things like air pollution. Our friends and families are dying today because of climate change and air pollution. And I think the word emergency and the fact that we've got this, it just doesn't feel like people really fully comprehend that scale of emergencies. Do you think we're being alarmist enough? Do you think it's dangerous to be too alarmist and that we'll put people off? Where do you stand on that?
It's a great question, Pete. I guess it speaks broader than just to climate change and tackling net zero, doesn't it? It's around how do you influence people to change. And some people will really be influenced by the burning platform, so to speak, that they really need to do something that's pushing them. For other people, they want to see what's possible, why will things be better, and the vision for that. And I think that's what many organisations are trying to do. And it comes back to the bit that I was saying earlier. We can actually provide better, more effective, more, you know, safer healthcare with a better patient experience, often at lower cost, and indeed definitely if we focus on it, with less impact on the environment. So I guess it's both, isn't it? And you know, eco and climate anxiety is absolutely real, and we need to be careful because there's a fine line about that. But at the same time, these things are you know, really scary and worrying. And I remember Dame Jackie Daniels doing that. And I said to her, oh, but, you know, please tell me how you wrote the business case for that, because my trust is wanting to think about that. And she said, no, this is a leadership thing. I think this is so important. We have to do it as an organisation. I'm declaring this emergency. So it's a great question, but I think it's a fine line, and it's for leaders like us and many others to be trying to navigate what are the things that are going to hook people in to really make a change? Because what we're talking about is change here, aren't we? And at the heart of it, often it's behaviour change, but at the level of organisations and individuals. So yeah, I've got no magic answers to that one, but I do grapple with that a lot. Just like you, around how to be framing this.
So what we're talking about is a movement, isn't it? Which takes, as you say, influential leaders like Jackie Daniel and yourselves. And Dominique, at UCL Partners, you've got an example of that, haven't you? You're creating a movement with your collaborative that you formed. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so we've got 17 NHS providers in our collab, in our partnership, and we went to them saying that net zero is really important. We're thinking about making this one of the priorities for our AHSN. This is an opt-in thing to join this collaborative, and I have to say, I was pushing at a complete open door, because these organisations were desperate to get additional help, learning, sharing, support. So we've joined together with five academic institutions across the partnership to really try and accelerate progress to net zero, and we're focusing on the discovery of our innovations and what can be brought in from various places, whether that's academia, whether that's commercial sector, whether that's other industries, whether that's healthcare organisations that sit outside of the NHS, outside of the UK, thinking very much about what those solutions are, how we use really good implementation science to adopt and spread, because often the issue is not the good ideas, but actually how we diffuse them and make sure people are using them, and then really make a strong case for evaluating that they have impact. And when you talk about things in the space of climate change or prevention, people often have a much higher bar for saying, oh, I want to see a return on investment for that, but we're not saying that about often a lot of the clinical interventions we're doing. So we're trying to support across the whole innovation pipeline. I'll give you a few sort of tangible examples. One is about energy. So how do hospitals in particular and other healthcare providers get more renewable energy into the way in which they're operating to become greener and cleaner? And for many of those organisations at an individual level, that can be quite tricky to negotiate contracts and navigate. So across our partnership, we're trying to do that at scale now, looking to progress power purchase agreements. So that's been one thing. And as Pete said, you know, AHSN's are in a prime place to be able to broker kind of conversations across the NHS and outside. And then the other thing, another example of what we're doing is a project called Connecting for Change, which has been supported by the Green Team, which is about how do we get researchers and the NHS to work better together. And that's not just for the sake of building good relationships, but we've got all these people working out in the NHS that can see the problems day to day about what they want to tackle around net zero, and not always sure where to start, where the evidence base exists. And we've got lots of really bright people sitting in academic institutions with either research that they have already developed that they want to get out into practice, or are looking to tackle new problems and questions. And so we've developed this great program, and we're using what's called a sandpit approach. We had 30 academics and NHS and other staff come together to look at NHS facilities and how we can think differently about energy and supply across our energy use across our pathways and our buildings use. And we've awarded some funding to four projects to now take that on for the next year. And I know, Caroline, you'll be sharing some links and things, so we can put those in the notes afterwards. But it's a great example of how we can bring together different sectors to come and tackle problems. And they're fantastic in the space of how do you safely shut down theatres. We know that, you know, operating theatres are using a whole lot of energy, ventilation, lighting overnight when they may not necessarily always be in use. How do we think differently about clinical trials and the pathways attached to those? So that's been really great to support a number of projects that help NHS organisations really accelerate their progress to these really, you know, important targets. But we're doing lots of other work, and many other academic health science networks are. And then Pete's sort of helping with that umbrella view across a large number of our organisations to make sure we're really joined up well on that.
It's a fantastic example you've described there of how to organise a collaborative and how to really turbocharge that movement that we were talking about, isn't it? If we pick on a couple more examples, as you were saying, Natalia, there's so much to talk about. It's such a huge subject. There's such a lot going on. But if I was going to ask you and Pete for some of your favourite examples, what would you say, Natalia? Is there a picture you can paint for us of something that's happened somewhere that's had a real impact?
Oh, that's a very good question. There's so much exciting stuff that's going on. I think there's some amazing work that's going on around the use of solar panels across the country. So trusts like Castle Hill Hospital in East Yorkshire is one of the first hospitals to be completely supported by renewable electricity during daylight hours. So work like that is fantastic to see. We've seen some amazing innovation using drones to deliver chemotherapy to patients on the Isle of Wight so that patients don't then have to travel to the mainland for their treatment, you know, minimising travel, kind of optimising patient outcomes and things like that. So there's amazing things like that. And then again, through competitions such as SBRI, so the Small Business Research Initiative, we've run a couple of net zero kind of programmes there. We've also seen some incredible innovations come through on kind of digital pathway transformation. So, you know, how we can actually optimise efficiency and productivity of pathways, but actually really thinking about that from a sustainability perspective. So not only does, you know, optimising a care pathway actually save money and make the experience much better for clinicians and for patients, but it also can really drive down kind of carbon emissions as well. So it's really just thinking it through for every type of innovation and for every type of project, because there is a sustainability element to everything. And so it's really just thinking about that.
Wow. Yeah, some exciting examples there. Drones delivering chemotherapy. I mean, it's just amazing. Pete, you've obviously, working with innovators, you'll have come across some amazing innovations too. What ones spring to your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I try and sort of partition them in my head between those innovations that have like a direct net zero benefit and those that maybe net zero is like a secondary benefit. So, for example, if I think about, and Natalia's mentioned some of the sort of funding framework with the SBRI, but Revolution Zero are a good example of a company that are doing some work around reusable PPE that's clearly, you know, aimed at net zero. That's their kind of business model. You know, how can they decarbonize the single-use PPE industry with innovative ways of materials and decontamination? And it's just it's been great to sort of see their journey from actually not being an entity at all with just an idea, right through to securing funding, delivery of their first decontamination pod to a hospital in Cornwall, and everything else in between, really. So really, really great to see that as an example. There are other companies, again, secured money through SBRI, but another example of a company that's maybe sort of secondary benefit, like Open Medical or Patient Knows Best. How can we change the digital pathways so that people and patients can and the services interaction can be more efficient and effective? And Open Medical have got some really great traction up and down the country in terms of their digital platforms, and recently I've been having my own interaction with the health service through my son who's accessed orthopaedic services. But I look and I think a great service from a clinical perspective, but you know, the amount of time that we've had to travel for unnecessary appointments, still getting letters through the post that, I'll be honest with you, don't you know, they're not great for me when I get them, because it just doesn't help me be organised. And I think I look at that and I think, look, the ink that's still going into printing that and the consumables that go into that very simple letter, sometimes there's multiple letters, and the consumables in that interaction. And I often look as well, you know, we're still waiting for some rehabilitation quite a few weeks after. And I look and I think, what a shame, because that could start today, that rehabilitation. We've got companies doing the digital pathways. And actually what's vitally important through any, it doesn't matter what specialty it is, but let's get the care started as soon as possible, because if we don't, we could have problems down the line. So I get really excited still about like the digital companies as well, whose products might have a secondary net zero benefit. And then we've got companies that we're working with as well that are helping people around carbon accounting. I mean, as I said, if we don't look at the numbers and if we don't help ourselves understand the numbers, we're never going to be able to look for the where the impact is, celebrate success, develop strategy. So there's some great companies. I've got a session on the 14th of September, a Green Hospital session, where we've got 40 innovators coming to present to people who are welcome to attend. And the four themes that we're focusing on are like virtual wards and models of care, so changing pathways of care, consumables, travel and transport, and energy and infrastructure. Because those four areas for me were the kind of like, you know, one where we had a lot of innovators in those themes, but actually quite important themes. So yeah, there's lots of innovation. But equally, I get excited about, as I said, the early stuff. We've had a company, Pollution Solution, whose business model is to take air pollution out of the air in busy places. So places where cars might be queuing, ambulances might be queuing. They're looking for an NHS site. I'm fairly certain they've secured one through work that we're doing with them. That excites me, you know, a really early level innovation that I think could have massive benefit to not only the NHS, but if we think about all those industries where there might be a lot of queuing cars, you know, people going to have like fast food drive-throughs, you know, and the staff that are breathing those fumes in every day that we'll be picking up the cost for in the NHS through respiratory disease and cardiovascular disease. So I think this stuff for us to play as a bit of an anchor institution to lead the way and to show other industry what great innovations out there. So yeah, lots of stuff.
Massive potential, isn't there, through innovation. And we should mention, shouldn't we, Dominique, the NHS Innovation Fellows. The NHS Innovation Accelerator, of course, is hosted by UCL Partners on behalf of the HSN Network. And they've got a theme at the moment. How do you describe it? They've got a particular emphasis on green, haven't they?
Yeah, thanks, Caroline. And it's with a sort of a collaboration between the Greener NHS team and the NIA team that there's a real focus now on sustainability. So whether that is innovations that these amazing entrepreneurs are developing that are squarely focused on sustainability or net zero, or whether it's a different type of innovation that they need to be focused on the impact on net zero and carbon. And they're getting some development around how to do that measurement and think about the impact. And also that's been part of the selection process and going forwards will be as well, to make sure that innovations that are coming into the NHS are really focused on that. So it's a fantastic opportunity for innovators to build their skills and really focus on sustainability and green agenda.
Dom, I mean, if you wouldn't mind me adding, sorry, because, you know, you're absolutely right, I've been linking with that NIA, and we've got one of the organisations that I couldn't, unfortunately, find the name of. I was just trying to look them, but their business model is around making staff travel more efficient and effective. So all of those community services staff that are going out to see patients in their own home, their business model is about how to make that care a little bit more sustainable, and some like the domiciliary care. So there's some brilliant people around, some great fellows, great innovators with lots of solutions.
Excellent. And there's so much to talk about, but we are running out of time. So we will put links to more information in the podcast notes and also your contact details, if that's OK with you all. I've got a final question for you. Could each of you name just one thing you would like people listening to do which would help towards achieving NHS net zero? Because we keep saying, don't we, how much there is to do, how much potential there is. But if I can ask for each one of you to give me a personal recommendation for one thing, what might that be?
I'm going to try and morph two into one, but use your data to have a great conversation with your finance lead. So data is absolutely fundamental to creating the business case, but it's essential that we get the finance people embedded in these conversations, and I don't think that's fully happening as well as it could do. So that's my first, because I think, as I said, there's a financial benefit into a lot of this work that we do, and bringing the finance lead in would be essential.
I'm gonna build on Pete's, which I completely agree with, but I think it's challenge yourself to have a challenging conversation with somebody within, you know, your team, within your department, within your organization. Be it even the chief executive, if your organisation hasn't declared a climate emergency, and actually challenge them, push them further, tell them that more can be done within that, you know, team, department, organisation. So I think it's up to each and every one of us to continue to challenge each other. You know, are we going quick enough, and are we doing more that we can?
I think mine's a sort of blend of a few things, which is making some personal changes, whether they're in the workplace or in your own private life, because all of those things will add up, even though they're small things. But I guess it's also about finding people to try and do that stuff more impactfully and at scale. So go out and look for others who are interested in working on this. In many organisations, there'll be lots going on already to try and get more involved in. This will only succeed with big numbers of people taking this stuff seriously and thinking that it's part of their job. So join networks within your organisation, outside your organisation, speak to your AHSN team, get in touch with us. We're looking for people who just think that this stuff is important and are up for amplifying and accelerating the work that's going on. So this takes leadership at all levels, wherever you're sitting within health and care. And so go out there and just do something. Go and find out what's going on and make a change today.
And share this podcast.
Exactly.
Thank you all so much. And we will come back to this topic. There's so much to talk about and so much changing all the time, isn't there? And so much to learn. So for now, thank you so much, Pete Waddingham, Natalia Kurek and Dominique Allwood. Thank you.
Thanks, Caroline.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Dominique Allwood, Pete Waddingham and Dr. Natalia Kurek. If you'd like to find out more about Greener NHS and the support from the AHSNs, soon to be renamed Health Innovation Networks, there are links in the podcast notes. Thank you for listening.